You're listening to Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. Across our state, across our country, we're talking about infrastructure, how it's failing, what that means, and what it's going to cost to fix the infrastructure problems. But what if the issue with our infrastructure isn't that we're not spending enough, but that we've already spent too much and spent it the wrong way? That's the argument my next guest makes. Chuck Marone is the founder and president of Strong Towns. He's a professional engineer, and he's a member of the American Institute of Certified Planners. Chuck Marone, welcome to Stateside. Good to have you with us.
Thanks so much for having me. I'm happy to be here.
Certainly safe to say that word infrastructure is probably one of the most used words of these days, isn't it?
Yeah, you hear it everywhere. And in fact, I've started to hear it in really odd places. Anytime someone gets asked, you know, what should we be doing from a public policy standpoint, you can't escape the word infrastructure coming out. It's like the universal thing we all agree on.
I want to ask you to take just a moment to listen to Michigan's Governor Rick Snyder. This is from his recent State of the State speech.
We're at risk in every corner of Michigan for aging infrastructure, and we cannot take this for granted. Michigan residents deserve safe, reliable, sustainable infrastructure. That's why I created the 21st Century Infrastructure Commission last year. The commission did tremendous work. They looked for best practices not just in our country, but around the world. They concluded that we need to invest more. We need to literally invest billions of dollars of new investment over the next several decades.
So, Chuck, what do you think's wrong with that approach about pumping billions into investing in infrastructure?
It's fascinating because it's conventional wisdom, and it's hard to argue with on its face. When you step back and look at the problem, you can see that, yes, there's a huge amount of infrastructure in the ground. It is deteriorating and it's failing. And the way we fix that problem, if you define the problem as, you know, stopping it from deteriorating, is you spend lots of money. If we actually dig into the problem, what we find is that the infrastructure investments we have made, and really this is a post-World War II condition, the infrastructure investments we have made don't actually create enough wealth and enough cash flow for local governments, for states, for counties, for cities to actually have the money to fix them. We'll spend, you know, $1 million on a road, and over the course of the life of that road, we won't get anywhere near $1 million back to fix it. And so when you add up everything we built, you see, like, oh my gosh, we have all this stuff out there we need to go out and fix. But if you actually step back and look at, you know, what our return on that investment was, what we actually got for it, it's like pathetically small. And it actually doesn't even justify the expense of going out to fix it.
I love the term you use, growth Ponzi scheme.
Yeah, because for many, many years, the solution to not having enough money to actually fix your infrastructure was you just go build more stuff. You've got a neighborhood that's falling apart and you can't afford to fix the frontage road. So what do you need? Well, you need another mile of frontage road so you can get another big box store and another McDonald's and some strip malls and some cul-de-sacs with homes on them. And then you can take that money to go back and make good on the promises you made a generation earlier. We're starting to reach the critical end of that where, you know, all Ponzi schemes kind of break down at the end. That's their very nature. We're starting to reach that at the city level and at the state level because we can't generate enough growth to keep it all going.
You actually did a fascinating case study in Lafayette, Louisiana, that proved that that city would have to raise taxes by, what, $8,000 per household just to tread water, just to pay for existing infrastructure?
It's amazing because Lafayette is a fantastic case study. One out of every $5 that the typical Lafayette family makes would have to go just to maintaining the stuff they've already built. So you want the street you drive on to be fixed. You want the sidewalks. You want the pipe to all be there. One out of every $5 you make, about $8,000 more than they're paying now per year, would have to go just to fixing stuff. That's not anything new. That doesn't count, you know, paying for schools or police protection or anything like that. That's just like to fix the pipe. That will never happen. That's an insane number. And so, you know, very much like we have seen happen in cities like Detroit, you're going to have a phase where there's a come to grips moment where we can't fix everything. Something's going to go bad. What is that?
Would that case study that you did in Lafayette, would that be representative, do you think, of cities here in Michigan?
Without a doubt. The thing that made Lafayette a fascinating case study is that its development pattern is just very post-World War II. It very much captures what kind of a typical American city is. You have an old historic downtown surrounded by kind of traditional walkable neighborhoods, and that was the original city as it existed kind of pre-Depression. After World War II, we started the first highway building phases, and you had the highways run through the middle of the city. You had growth out on the edge. And then in subsequent generations, we've had this kind of horizontal, kind of big bang expansion out from the middle. And you see just acres and acres and acres now being developed quite rapidly with single family homes spread far apart.
Yeah, no problem coming up with that scenario in Michigan. What's the solution to this growth Ponzi scheme problem that we've got?
I think it's important when we use words like solution to actually maybe better define what we're talking about. You know, problems have solutions and predicaments have outcomes.
Okay.
And in a sense here, we've grown beyond a problem with a solution and we've created for ourselves some predicaments. I mean, the people in Lafayette are not going to spend one out of every $5 they make on infrastructure maintenance. What it means is that we actually not only have to understand the problem. So, you know, you had the governor on, he was saying how they're going to spend a whole bunch more money. I think that that's fine if we understand the problem. If we don't, we're just expanding it. We're just making it worse. So if local government officials can understand the problem, understand their insolvency, they can start to take the money that they do have and invest it in ways that actually pay a return, will actually, you know, be good investments for the community.
Both President Trump and Governor Snyder have advocated these public-private partnerships, the so-called P3s, as a way that you could rebuild infrastructure and not raise taxes. You think P3s can work?
In the short, no. You know, could it work? Yes. But really, the way we're talking about it is wrong. We're talking about it in terms of how do we keep everything we have now and keep it going. What cities have run into, and states too, is that we've run into the kind of this wall of how much we can borrow. You know, we're kind of capped out. If you went back to the early 1950s, cities typically spent about 2% of their budget on debt service. That now, on a national average, is about 18%, and it's growing. And I've seen cities where it's as high as 50%. Those numbers just don't work, and they're kind of endemic of us trying to borrow money to not have to face financial reality. When I was an engineer, I worked on projects like this all the time. We would have, you know, $500,000 a year for maintenance. That didn't get us very far. But if we just borrowed a bunch of money, we could take that $500,000 and spend it on a bond payment instead and then do a whole lot. That's what states have done. What you see now with the public-private partnerships is a way to kind of have corporations borrow the money for you, and then you just, like, lease the stuff back.
So you're not really solving the problem.
No. It's basically like I can't afford to buy a car. You know, and I can't afford a car loan, so I'll go and I'll lease a car instead. Mm. Well, you're still spending the money every month, but you don't have to go through the process of qualifying for a bank loan. That's not solving the problem, no.
Chuck, you have said Detroit could serve as a model for the rest of the country in this. How so?
I say that in a complimentary sense. I think Detroit's an amazing place, and I think what is going on in Detroit right now, while tragic in some ways, is also, you know, beautiful in the kind of emergent properties of just the community relationships that people are developing. Detroit, if we go back, you know, to the early 1900s, is one of the top three, five, you know, cosmopolitan cities in the world. People came from all over the world to go to Detroit. This is an amazing, amazing place. Detroit got started ahead of everybody else. They were kind of the model for the rest of the country and how to use automobile infrastructure to spread your city out and experience very rapid growth. And Detroit has just kind of arrived at the destination of that a lot sooner than everybody else. Detroit has had to deal with those insolvencies. When you look at Detroit today, you see how they struggled, in a sense, on the way down to try to prop everything up. Crazy debt things they took on, the kind of look the other way on some corruption things just because they had to have the growth. If we can avoid those things and learn those lessons and get to where Detroit is now, where I think they're making a commitment to small incremental investments, to neighborhoods, to people on the ground, I think we can avoid a lot of the pain and suffering that we've seen the last two decades in Detroit.
Getting the lights back on.
Yeah.
Low-risk investment.
Well, when you focus on bread and butter instead of dessert, you can actually improve people's lives with a lot less cost. And, you know, Detroit has had to humble itself, in a sense, to say, you know, we're going to focus on these basics and make it all work. And I think they've seen positive results from that.
Chuck, if you could sit face to face in front of Governor Snyder, in front of President Trump, both of whom have talked a lot about investing in infrastructure, what would you say to them?
Well, I'm not a political person, and I kind of struggle.
All the better.
Well, yeah. I mean, I know that there is a pressure to solve these problems now. You know, we see this in, like, the medical profession. You go to a doctor, and if the doctor says, you know, what you really need is diet and exercise, we're like, well, no, I want you to solve my problem now. And it's a little bit like the same thing with our politics. You know, I would tell the governor, I would tell the president, our cities need a lot of diet and exercise. They need a lot of healthy habits. And the more we can do to help them develop that, I think the better they're going to be. I think the more we feed them, you know, monetary sugar high and, you know, keep them from kind of coming to grips with some of these harder decisions, I think the more we're going to hurt them and the more people are going to suffer in the end. A true leader right now today is helping us develop good habits at the local level as opposed to kind of feeding our worst instincts.
Chuck Marrone, founder and president of Strong Towns. Chuck, it was great to talk with you and share these ideas. Thank you so much for spending time with us on Stateside.
Thanks so much.